I want to ask you all to clear your minds today of any to-dos, any distractions, any clutter, just for a few minutes while we're here together, and put your mind to work now imagining something with me. We are going to be entering into a season soon where we're talking a lot about peace on earth. But what would that look like, really, today? What do you think of when you hear that phrase? Just for you to keep in your imagination, what does that look like? A world where the wolf lies down with the lamb. A world where, as Isaiah says back in chapter 2, we study war no more. A world where, like you just heard in the message and song, we can tell all the soldiers to go home because the fights are not worth fighting. What does that look like? Is that hard for us to imagine? I think it's pretty hard in this world. Does it sound like some faraway dream that we only ever even think about during Christmas seasons? Or is it what God is all about calling us to every season of every year? Such visions have always seemed too big for us. It's always been that way, even many millennia ago. Even Isaiah in his time, they had a hard time imagining the world being like that. And we find ourselves in Isaiah today. This is where the narrative lectionary takes us. We've been for a year and a half now following a different Bible reading plan for churches that's trying to help us see the Bible as one big connected story, not separate disjointed ones. And the stories today that you heard from Isaiah present two very different moods, like I said. That first one is so sad. It's seldom read in churches. You won't see it in the typical Bible reading plans of most churches. That chapter 5 about the vineyard, you don't read that because it's not uplifting. It's not one you want to hear during Advent with carols. But there's a lot there for us to think about because much like Hosea last week, it paints a picture of a God who is not just angry at how things are in the world, but actually admits feeling helpless. A God who admits feeling helpless because God is shown saying, what more could I have done for you? With everything going badly, what more could I have done? God says he's cared for the people, he's protected them, called them and blessed them, even when they turn away over and over again. Now, last week, Hosea compared that back and forth, give and take relationship to a parent and a child that's rebelling. But Isaiah, this week, compares God to the most careful and devoted gardener. He tends all of us, takes care of us the way you would with a vineyard or a garden. He shapes us. And this is Isaiah's hands-down favorite image of God. He uses it 16 times. God is this gardener. Now, I'm not a gardener. I'm a brown thumb. Are there any real gardeners here? Does anyone like to garden here? It is really painstaking work. I know it's not quick and easy work. You have to clear away stones. You have to find good ground. You have to dig things up and constantly check for weeds. It can be very tedious work, but it's a labor of love. So that's a cool image of God for us to think about, tending to us so carefully, digging out all the things that are getting in the way of our growth. But God has done that for all the people. And now the Bible's saying he's at the end of his rope because even after all this work and this care, his vineyard is only yielding wild grapes. Now, I don't know about you. Has anyone ever drank a wine made of wild grapes? I think there's one called muscadine. It's not very good. It's not what you want. It's not what you intend when you take all that care. Even with all this careful, loving attention, the people are turning away, rejecting God. They are wild grapes. And more than anything, what God sees that cuts him to the core is injustice and violence. Now, here's where we actually miss something, not reading the original language. I don't do this very often because I know you guys aren't trying to learn Greek and Hebrew, and I'm not either, but the original version of chapter 5 is like a poetic pun, like that knee slapper I said to the kids that none of them got. But you might appreciate this. It's like a dad joke. In chapter 5, it says in the original language, God expected justice, mishpat, but got bloodshed, mishpah. They sound really close, right? Really close. Expected justice, but got bloodshed. They almost sound the same. And I only point that out to say we make that mistake too, don't we, in our world. We think justice and violence have to be the same sometimes, that violence is the only answer to get justice in our world the way it is. So we mix those things up too. We think they start to look almost exactly the same. And did you know that when our 16th president Abraham Lincoln gave his second inaugural address, it was right towards the end of the Civil War when so many people had died, and that as he's giving that speech, the Lincoln Family Bible, one of these big guys, was open right near him, open to Isaiah chapter 5, that one that you heard this morning. Now, I think that is powerful because America had become like that broken down wild vineyard, nothing like its original intention. 623,000 people had died in this war on both sides, and what was left? And President Lincoln said these words then. He said, both read the same Bible and pray to the same God. Each evokes God's aid against the other. The prayers of both could not be answered. That of neither has been answered fully. The Almighty has his own purposes. He was a great speaker, so of course that was a great speech, but that really kind of points to some of these themes this morning. What are we fighting for? Are there really sides? Are our purposes the end all? Because God has dreams and purposes for us and has given us what we want most. He's given us freedom. Freedom to live up to all of those dreams or freedom to royally screw things up again and again. He's given us freedom to love him or to hurt him deeper than we could ever imagine. And God's frustration and hurt in Isaiah today are really at their peak because God's getting desperate saying, you know what? I am taking down the hedge. Let's see how they do without my protection. If I'm not doing all this work, taking care of them, looking out for them, let's just see what happens. It doesn't say God is going to strike them with lightning and destroy them himself. It just says he's taking away the protection and is letting things unfold. And again, just like last week with Hosea, I think we can relate to God in this dilemma, in him wringing his hands this way, because aren't there definitely some times in our lives where we cannot keep protecting someone from the consequences of their actions? Aren't there those times where we have to remove our hedge, so to speak? Where we have to, otherwise, if we don't remove it, our behavior becomes something that enables them to keep doing the things that are actually hurting them and hurting us. So we take away our hedge. And God gets that. We're in that same boat with him. There's a pastor in the Brethren Church named Don Wilhelm who says it really well. Sometimes what feels like divine punishment is simply the end of the trail we have blazed for ourselves. And God is not up there going, ha, I told you this would happen. Believe me, God agonizes watching us get to the end of that trail. God agonized and grieved and was heartbroken watching the people of Israel get to the end of that trail because they had made all these corrupt alliances with all the nations around them, and they finally turned on them. They finally overthrew them and destroyed everything they had built, and it broke God's heart to watch that. There is a classic Christian book that I highly recommend to any of you. It's been around for a while, and it's really easy to read. It's not real heady, doesn't get into Hebrew and Greek. It's a really easy read, and it's called Disappointment with God by Philip Yancey. And one of the big takeaways in that book is that we are not the only ones that are disappointed with how things turn out in life. We're not the only ones. God is disappointed too. And the author asks, what is it like to be a God in a world with white nationalists and 815 million people going hungry every night and Sandy Hook massacres? What is it like to be a God in a world like that? God is disappointed too, not just us. In this world that has really gone so wild off its axis from the dreams he had for us. And that could be the end right there. We could all just say, well, that's why the world's getting worse and not better. He's written us off. He's taken away that hedge. He's letting us destroy ourselves. What a bummer. But that's not the end of the story. The beauty is there's also Isaiah chapter 11 that you heard today. So those vineyards of our lives, the vineyards of our superpower nations, they might get cut down to size. They might get cut down to nothing but dead stumps where it looks like nothing can grow again. But Isaiah says a shoot will come up from the stump of Jesse. A shoot will come from the stump. Something can still grow, and it will surprise us, and it will be nothing like anything we've experienced before, nothing like the kingdoms that we would have ruled on our own. It will be ruled by a new leader, an ideal leader who will not judge any of us by first impressions, but will judge with righteousness and equity, especially towards those who are the most poor, the most vulnerable. Because who is more judged and discounted and looked over and underestimated in our world than those who are really poor, right? Who just gets left behind more than those who are the most vulnerable, considered the weakest? And God is saying they will be judged with righteousness and equity. Now, is God saying that by naming those people, that the rest of us, if we're not poor, are not going to be judged with that same righteousness? Are we not going to get that equity if we're not poor? No. But just like there are movements in our world that try to shine a light on those who are especially hurting these days, like Black Lives Matter, all these groups that try to say this group needs extra help, so too does the Bible shine a great big spotlight on those who we are all trained to disregard. We don't mean it in our hearts. We are socialized in this world to disregard some of the people. And the Bible reminds us that even those with no worldly value in our eyes will count before Him. That those who are trampled down by the way we operate things are going to get special attention and grace. Again and again, the Bible says that. Again and again, that how we treat those who are hurting the most will actually be a test of our faith one day. Just think of Jesus saying in Matthew 25, the sheep go this way, the goats go that way, based on whether they visited the prisoner, fed the hungry, clothed the naked, helped the sick. The last shall be first, and the first shall be last. It's all over the Bible, that special attention to those hurting most. But that does not mean that if we are blessed, and not particularly poor, not particularly suffering, that we get left out. It doesn't mean that. It doesn't mean that we won't benefit from this new kingdom, because this new king that is coming, again, is judging us, seeing us for who we really are, seeing us beyond our bank accounts and our accomplishments and all the things the world sees, even seeing beyond those walls that we might have put up with certain people in our lives to keep them out, because they hurt us or they make us feel guilty for what we have. He can see beyond that, this new king. This new king can see through to the core of every one of us. So that's good news for everybody, for everyone. And just like I asked at the beginning of this sermon, I wonder if that's hard for us to imagine, someone who can really see all of us that way, who can truly see us all equally. Can we really have hope in that? Whether or not we have the same scale of hurt in this moment as those living in war-torn or hungry countries, we can all relate to those times where our life has felt like a dead stump, where life just delivers terrible blows to us because of some loss, someone close to us has died or moved away or left us, where maybe we got fired and we were expecting job security, maybe we get a diagnosis we were never expecting. All kinds of things can deliver blows and leave us feeling cut down, cut off, just lifeless, like there's no way forward. And can a shoot sprout up from those places for us too? The Bible says it can. And that one of the things we have to remember is we don't grow alone or in isolation. God doesn't tend to just one plant. The Bible never talks about God just pouring water on one of us, but tending to the whole vineyard. God tending to us all. And the more that we can see that we all matter in God's eyes, the more we will live the kinds of lives God designed for us to live. But it's a risk to let others grow alongside us because they're not going to grow perfectly. They may look like a weed to us. We may look like a weed to them. It's a risk and it's scary, but God is trying to tend to us all. When I was writing this sermon, I think it was Thursday afternoon, I found out that the Walmart in El Paso, Texas was reopened to the public. You all know what happened there, the place where 22 human beings were killed and 24 more injured by a mass shooter back in August, by an individual who had become a truly wild grape, ripe with bigotry and hatred. And I remembered one story that happened from that community when they were in the depths of grief, that one of those people who died, her name was Margie Ricard, and she had this lifelong partner, they were never married, but together for decades, named Antonio Basco, who was so grief-stricken, he lived in his car for a week in the parking lot of the Walmart after she was shot, just lived in his car and kind of kept vigil there. And he said to the media he was afraid nobody would attend her burial. They weren't very public people, they were quiet. But he invited the public. He told them anyone could come to her funeral, and thousands of people showed up in 100-degree heat, all of them strangers to Margie and to Antonio, strangers showing up and it was one of the biggest funerals that the state of Texas had ever seen. And it was just such a witness, people showing up for each other, just to say to someone else hurting, you're not suffering alone. That is such a witness of the God that we believe in. We have that power to remind each other that there is a larger hope and a bigger story at play than the ones that we read in the news every morning. God is telling a bigger story here than all these suffering stories we tell by ourselves. He's able to do that. And we're about to be in the season of Advent soon. And that is the season where, more than ever, we're reminded God is promising a new kingdom. Something new is on the way, where later on, God says in Isaiah chapter 11, this king will appear who will be a signal for all the nations to come together. So let's allow God to keep tending to us, to keep working on us and our world. Let's cooperate with his Spirit moving, even when it seems risky, even when it seems new or beyond what we ourselves can imagine. There's a theologian from the country of Brazil who says, imagination is more real and reality less real than we had thought. God is at work, friends. Whether or not our imaginations can fathom it, he's at work. And God's mission is to redeem this world, and it won't be derailed by all of us wild grapes. Thank God, our hope doesn't depend on any of us. It depends on this gracious love that keeps tending to us and will never stop helping us to grow. Amen.